Her shoulders collapsed in an involuntary sigh of relief, but the next instant her face flushed with anger. She fairly ran to my table, flung a bill at the waiter, and indicated the door with a jerk of her head. It was obvious that she did not trust herself to speak. Outside, waiting for us at the curb, was a government car, a long black limousine with its engine running, driven by a most unpleasant-looking man. He got out as we approached, opened the door, and then locked it behind us. Where were they taking me? Remembering the Hollywood version of such scenes, I tried to keep track of where we were going. And as I did, the humour of the situation came to me, because we were going to the hotel. Just before the car stopped, the tour director spoke her first words. "You have held the group up half a day. We have called every hospital, every police station. We finally called the morgue. Unfortunately, you were not there. Where have you been?" "Oh," I said, "I got separated, and so I walked around. I really am sorry for the trouble I've caused you." "Well, I want to tell you officially, sir, that you are no longer welcome here. Should you attempt to enter this country again, you will discover as much for yourself." And so I did. A year later, I applied again for a visa to Czechoslovakia and was turned down. I tried once more 2 years after that, and again was refused. It was 5 years before I was allowed back inside that beautiful land. And meanwhile, I had seen such persecution of Christians that Czechoslovakia, by contrast, seemed a place of freedom and liberty. Chapter 9. The Foundations Are Laid. The next few months seemed to be pure frustration. The trips to Poland and Czechoslovakia had come about almost without my thinking about them. But now when I began to make inquiries about return visits to these places and trips to other Iron Curtain countries, I encountered month after month of officialdom, questionnaires, delays, forms in triplicate, but never a visa. Even my own little room posed problems. In Czechoslovakia I had thought so often about that room waiting for me at home and longed to be back in it. Now I discovered a drawback I could never have anticipated. Perhaps it was the very fact that it was so snug and comfortable. At any rate, the room itself came to symbolize for me the fact that I was very much alone. Day after day, as I sat in that room drafting letters to consulates, I would dream of a wife who would share both the room and the vision of work behind the curtain. On more lucid days, I would laugh at myself. If missionary work was a poor life to offer a beautiful girl, the girl in my dreams was gorgeous, what would she say to this new mission field I had glimpsed, where separation and secrecy and uncertainty would be the best I could offer? These, as I say, were objections that reason raised. The girl herself, being a dream girl, never mentioned them. Money was another problem. Although neither Geltje nor Arya ever mentioned the subject, I knew that I should be participating in the expenses of the household.